Thank you for joining us today as we dive deeper into the important topic of digital health literacy. We're going to talk about what it really means, how it has had such an impact on many lives, especially this past year, and opportunities to bring health literacy programs to communities throughout the state. My name is Caitlin Mowat, and I'm the project manager at Wisconsin Health Literacy. I have been working with the National Network of Libraries of Medicine, the Greater Midwest Region, for the past 3 years on a program called Dr. Google, Finding Health Information You Can Trust. We are going to discuss this program today and hear from professionals in the field. Before we begin, I'm joined by our Health Literacy Director, Stan Hudson, who will give us a better understanding of Wisconsin health literacy and the work we do. Welcome, Stan.
Thank you, Caitlin. So Wisconsin health literacy has been around for a little over a decade, but the field of health literacy itself has been around for really the past 25 years in the U.S. For Wisconsin health literacy, in 2010, Wisconsin Literacy, which is our home organization, formed a division originally called Health Literacy Wisconsin. At that time, the focus was to really make sure that all our healthcare providers are trained in health literacy concepts and are speaking to folks in ways that they can understand. All medication labels follow universal standards and design principles that are easy to understand. And health literacy efforts can be sustained across Wisconsin. And so the division grew quickly. And so in 2014, we actually changed our name to Wisconsin Health Literacy instead of Health Literacy Wisconsin, and developed new branding. But over that time, we have been trying to make a positive impact in the state and even reached outside of the state across the U.S. We host a biennial health literacy summit every other year here in Madison that really highlights health literacy issues. We have created numerous community-based workshops around a Let's Talk About series, Let's Talk About the Flu, Let's Talk About Pain Medicines, to really provide community-based education and make sure people really understand the risks of different things and are able to understand their health and make those appropriate decisions for themselves. And we've also formed many partnerships and collaborations through grant-funded projects. One of our largest right now is a medication label project that started in 2013. And across the last 7 years, we've been working with pharmacies to make those prescription labels easier to read and understand so that people are taking their medications correctly and not making those mistakes that might put them in the hospital. And we've received two grants to work on this project, the first from the Wisconsin Partnership Program, and then more recently from Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment at the Medical College of Wisconsin to make all that work possible. And then most recently, we have been emphasizing our focus on health equity and diversity and inclusion within healthcare systems and communities, because we really see health literacy and health equity as one and the same. You're not going to have good communication if we really aren't meeting folks where they're at and being culturally appropriate to develop that trust necessary for good communication.
Thanks for that overview, Stan. All this talk about health literacy, can you share with our listeners what health literacy means and why it's so important?
Sure, Caitlin. Basically, health literacy is our ability to find health information, to process, understand, and evaluate it, to communicate it to others, and to act upon that information. There are two parts to it. There are those individual skills that we all have and have learned. Unfortunately, we don't teach health literacy skills in school as much as we should, but we are advocating to improve that. But then there's also the system side and the ways that professionals, health systems, insurers communicate that information and interact and enable individuals to be able to navigate their systems, to be able to get the health care and the support they need in managing their health. So as you can imagine, it uses a wide range of skills, anywhere from literacy and reading and speaking to numeracy. You know, being able to calculate things often comes into play, and sometimes some critical analysis and things. and those communication and action skills. And so it's a pretty complex set of skills that we expect people to have when they come into the health system. And unfortunately, most folks don't have those skills. And I'll even admit at times I don't have those skills. And so we really try to work with the health systems to make sure that we're meeting patients where they are and providing those supports. And so it's important to us because this is something that really can't be seen. It's very hard to measure. And so many times it goes unnoticed in healthcare settings. And if we don't realize that we're not speaking and getting patients to truly understand what they need to do, that can be challenging. So, for example, in medication safety, you know, not knowing how to take your pills can get you into trouble and put you back into the hospital. You know, not knowing how to pay bills or getting to appointments and things can be another challenge and can lead to hardship with folks. Not understanding forms to be signed, you know, those consent forms that are written by lawyers that can be very, very hard to read because really they're written by, you know, someone who's had about 20 years of education. And then what we've found is that in healthcare, especially, about a third of the people who the healthcare system often lists as being non-compliant, they're non-compliant because they just really don't understand what to do or why they need to do it. And so we're really trying to change that. And one of the other challenges with health literacy is that this isn't something that's just tied to your education. Anyone at any time can experience low health literacy. I am well educated. I've been working in healthcare for many, many years now, over a couple decades, but I still will have very low health literacy. You know, when you get a dire diagnosis such as cancer, you know, a lot of times people shut down. They've got to process just the fact that they were told they have cancer before they're going to be able to seriously consider any treatment options and start to make those decisions for themselves. So we really see health literacy as impacting everyone at some point in their life.
You know, Stan, I think that's one of the most important things to stress to our listeners today. Everyone can experience low health literacy at some point in their lives. And that is why we do the work we do to improve processes in healthcare and see less confusion and barriers in making health decisions. Stan, before you go, can you tell us what Wisconsin Health Literacy is currently doing to make an impact in improving health literacy?
Sure. Our organization focuses on different ways to make an impact. I'm advocating with our state legislators and other decision makers in hospitals whenever possible to educate on what we just talked about and why health literacy matters. Working with health professionals, health insurance systems, health systems and partners to provide health literacy trainings, evaluate how well they're doing in health literacy, and providing recommendations on implementing health literacy techniques to improve that workflow and patient understanding. Also applying for a variety of grants that focus on our mission to promote clear communication between those who give and those who receive healthcare services and really strengthen public health knowledge across the state. And then also because of that and applying for grants, that allows us to bring many free programs to communities throughout the state, exactly like the Dr. Google program that we're going to be talking about today.
Great. Thank you for joining us, Stan, and sharing your work of Wisconsin Health Literacy. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us on possible programming in your community, please contact us at healthliteracy@wisconsinliteracy.org. Join us later in the program where we will speak with one of our partners, Dr. Bethany Howlett, about the latest important health information you need to know about COVID resources. Now we will hear from Library Director Barb Kruger, who joins us from Deer Park Public Library in Wisconsin. A first time visiting the library in rural Wisconsin, you had no question you were in the right place as deer horns filled the room.
Caitlin, thank you for asking me to participate in this broadcast. Deer Park is located in west central Wisconsin's St. Croix County, an hour east of the Twin Cities. With a population of 218, Deer Park is the smallest municipality in Wisconsin to have a public library, including the deer antlers. The library also serves residents of area townships. So Thank you again for including our small library in this project.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And, you know, we were recently informed that librarians are thought of as the second most trusted professionals for someone to get reliable information about their health. And, you know, first being doctors. So I think that says a lot for the relationships you build with community members and the insight you can provide. Can you tell us why you decided to host the workshop Health Online, Finding Information You Can Trust for your patrons?
After learning about the workshop from another library director, I was excited to learn more about it. After reading the project goals and design, I was determined that Deer Park Public Library would host a workshop session. The key points influencing my decision were the goal of identifying and effectively using trustworthy sources of online information is fundamental to me as a librarian. Two, the interactive hands-on format of the workshop would give participants who may not have had the opportunity to use technology a safe place to use tablets and try online searching. Third, as Deer Park Public Library has a limited programming budget, the fact that this was a free program really appealed to me. Wisconsin Health Literacy would provide the tablets for participants. Nothing to lose with participating in this. Health touches everyone, so a broad audience appeal. Last but not least, the communications from Caitlin, answering my initial inquiry, questions, scheduling the workshop were so clear and timely. I was so excited.
Well, thank you. We were very excited to do the workshop, and you know, we can't believe it was really just about 2 years ago. So time is flying by.
It's gone by so fast.
It has. And thinking back to that workshop, were there any key takeaways from the presentation you incorporated into how you do things at Deer Park Library?
There were. I did share the list of websites to visit for health information with staff, and I keep that list handy by our public computers for users. We've incorporated the website checklist, not only for health-related websites, but for evaluating other informational websites. I've used it when evaluating print health materials in the library, both while weeding the collection and purchasing new materials. So I could apply it to beyond the digital online use. So practical and so useful. And I made the handouts available for people who were unable to attend the presentation.
Wow, that's wonderful. Those you were really took a step beyond.
We tried.
That's great.
We definitely tried to do that.
Thank you for sharing how you could incorporate the program materials into your sustainability and helping the patrons find health information. And since that workshop was hosted at your library, have you seen a difference in the way participants look for health information? You had talked about having those handouts readable and handy for them to use on the side of computers. Have they asked questions, or have you seen an overall impact from the workshop?
I had to really step back and think about this question. And I reviewed the workshop materials too, because 2 years ago, it goes by fast and you think, how are we using this? Has it had an impact? One impact that I just discovered as I was reviewing the materials is something I'm going to be implementing, and that is offering a print version of Medline Plus magazine to the library users. I discovered that I could do a bulk subscription and offer that to our users. So while it's not online digital information, it's still current health information I can offer to our users. So that's something that the library was impacted with. And when our senior center opens to the public again, I hope to share that information with them. And another impact is how our library staff evaluate digital and health information. And the participants in the workshop have commented that they are more discerning when searching for health information and reading what other people may have shared or posted on Facebook and other social media. Library users overall trust the library, as you have stated previously, to provide accurate current information. So using the evaluation guidelines for print material, as I mentioned, has had an impact on our nonfiction collection and currency of relevancy of information. I think that's making sure whether it is digital or print, that accurate, reliable information is so critical and so important. The trustworthiness of what we're providing our users or pointing them towards online is so important. So
absolutely,
it has had a positive impact.
Wonderful. That is great to hear. And you nailed it on having both an online impact and both in electronic materials and printed materials. So being able to incorporate some of the objectives and goals from the workshop in both learning online and offline, it's great to hear that you can incorporate those checklists and checking for credibility in multiple ways and not just that one way. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, I'm going to add one point here is that because of the demographics in the area and a majority of the library users that Deer Park serves are people who are not using technology, much as I love it, it has its appropriate place. I want to be sure that users who don't use it have access to appropriate, reliable information as well, which is why I love this program.
Good. Well, we have a lot of information, and we hope to partner with you on more opportunities. So thank you for sharing all that lovely insight. I have a few more questions. As it relates, you've talked about accessibility and being in rural Wisconsin. I think we've really seen some impacts as far as this past year related to COVID-19. We've seen some libraries that have had to have extended periods of time for closing their doors through the pandemic, limiting access to resources, whether it be online resources, getting internet access or those printed materials, and keeping things virtual. So keeping in mind and that related to the digital divide that we're experiencing, and those that already struggle with getting reliable access on the internet, what have been some of the biggest hurdles for your library and surrounding libraries that you may have heard of in the past year?
Well, as you just said, libraries have faced many hurdles this past year as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the initial hurdles was reliable sources of information, health information related to COVID-19. And this was true for libraries as well as to the general public. Was accessing reliable, trustworthy information. That was key in decision-making processes. So the tools that we learned through the workshop came into play. Here are sources that we could go to that would provide reliable information. One of the biggest hurdles for Deer Park and surrounding libraries was determining what safety protocols for staff and library users to follow in to order to provide access to library materials. What library materials could be safely circulated? Could library users be safely allowed into libraries? How to provide programming to library users? How to safely provide services to library users with poor or no digital access? I could continue on But you get the idea of what libraries have been grappling with for this past year. And it's that source of information. Our county health, public health departments, the National Library of Medicine, CDC, the resources that, the Wisconsin Literacy Project had helped provide to us throughout that project. We relied on them this last year. And then beyond accessibility issues, library directors and their staff have been dealing with the same personal issues that others have had throughout the pandemic. The isolation of quarantine, the need to learn new technology while working from home, juggling of home and family, transitioning to virtual meetings. For librarians, how to support our communities, stress, isolation, and safety. Where can we gain support for each other and our communities throughout the pandemic? That was huge, very huge for all of us.
And thank you for sharing that. The support key has been so important, I think, in many organizations surviving and just coming together, and families in isolation. And you touched on so many important topics that many individuals and professionals are dealing with right now and will continue to deal with. So thank you for taking that, you know, to a personal level and sharing how you're working through your trying times and how this program has able to help you in some aspect, not in all, you know, but to give you some base as finding reliable health information as one step to one of many questions that people have out there is what is true, what's not true, when should I go get tested, when should I get vaccinated? So I think that's all very relevant information and questions that are happening. And we're going to talk now just a couple other questions about how are you keeping community members engaged during the pandemic with the isolation you talked about, with those struggles and accessibility. How are you keeping people engaged in your community?
Some of it goes back to the very basics. There's a community sign as people come into town. So we would post on the sign when the library was open. Sad to say when we were closed during the Safer at Home, but when we were able to begin offering curbside pickup services, when we began to allow people back into the library. And then through your standard digital resources, social media, Facebook, our website, those were some of the ways that we were able to communicate what was happening. Village board meetings, library board meetings. Once again, because we're so small, because of our library usage, we did not do as much, or we did not offer virtual programming ourselves, but we would link to virtual programs that were available. And when the weather cooperated in the summer and around Thanksgiving, Halloween, we held a couple of outdoor programs following safety recommendations, wearing masks, social distancing. But that was huge to hold those two events. And when we promoted them, we said we will be following safety precautions. Please wear face masks. Please maintain social distance. And fortunately here, our users have been so good about respecting that and following those guidelines. I just count us very fortunate with respect to that, that our community has supported us in following those safety guidelines. And an idea that I've had now, Caitlin, that I was going to bring up to you, we have a television that is by our circulation desk. And so I just was thinking the other day, I need to have something running on this again. So I was thinking about some of the information from the Wisconsin Health Literacy that I could put the program up there. And when people come in to browse, here it is. It can be going through it. So a simple way, but right here in the library that people could have access to some of this information. Because we fall back into old habits. You know, it's easy to do.
Absolutely.
So if we can do some reminders, so that's, you know, because the pandemic has not gone away. It is still here. And we need to be vigilant about a lot of, about the accuracy of information still. So
absolutely.
That's what
and
we're
I
trying
think
to
you
do.
Touched a good point too on having the outdoor activities. We'll all be eager to see the weather warm up where we can have some more of that and those gatherings in those outdoor spaces and how you can be creative in that setting and using your virtual online social media to promote these activities. And absolutely, get creative in what visual spaces you have in the library to share, hey, check out this event, or a reminder when you're looking for health information. So awesome, awesome ideas. Yep.
You know, there's the park. Some of the other libraries have used story walks. So that's something I'd like to, you know, take and do up at our local park. Even if it's just little, you know, here's a story, but here's also reminders about check out this, you know.
Well, that sounds so lovely right now, a walk in the park.
and I just had a terrific idea. Brainstorm as we're chatting. Our community senior center has continued to, well, they're not having meals in where people can come. They are still doing pickup, I'll call them curbside meals that people can come pick up, and they're doing Meals on Wheels. I could prepare some information to put into their to-go bags. Instead of people coming just to the library and getting information. And we have programmed with the senior center previously, prior to COVID-19 pandemic. And so that would be a great, I'm not all excited now. I just have another, you know, idea of way of sharing information.
Absolutely. And when you can get out to the community and reach them that way, instead of them always, you know, coming to you, that's one of the key ways to get them engaged. So great idea. That's awesome. Well, we are going to wrap up today's discussion. And sure. I thank you again, Barb, for joining us on today's broadcast about finding reliable health information online. But before we do, just any additional information you'd like to share related to digital literacy and what you might find important about looking for health information?
Yes, there is, Caitlin. Digital literacy and finding reliable health information is ongoing. It's not a one-time, one-and-done project. Circumstances change. People's need for different health information changes, as evidenced with this past year and the COVID-19 pandemic. 2 years ago, when we did the workshop, would we have anticipated people were going to be searching out information about PPE, quarantining library materials? Circumstances change, you know, situations change. Having access to Wisconsin Health Literacy's organization's resources is important for all of the Wisconsin libraries. And as a director of a library with limited staff and funding, I really appreciate the opportunity to make those resources available to benefit the Deer Park Public Library users with respect to health literacy. Health is important to each and every one of us in so many ways, whether it's mental health, physical health, environmental health. we need to understand and have access to reliable, accurate information. Thank you for offering and doing everything that you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And we look forward to working with you in the future and more opportunities.
Same here. I'm excited.
If you would like to host a Dr. Google Health Online program, please contact me at Caitlin, Caitlyn, at wisconsinliteracy.org. Join us later in the program where we will speak with Dr. Bethany Howlett about the latest important information you need to know about COVID resources and other issues that have emerged since the pandemic began. Barb shared a lot of great points on how their library has had to adjust from the effects of COVID-19. It has impacted everyone some way. Among many changes COVID has brought, one has been the more frequent use of technology to stay connected. People are relying on the internet to stay updated on the virus, vaccines, and global impacts. According to the Pew Research Center, roughly half of U.S. adults, 53%, say the internet has been essential for them personally during the pandemic. We use the internet to know if places are closed, if restrictions have been updated, and most importantly, communicate with one another as we experience quarantines and social isolation. We have seen many shifts in the way healthcare is delivered. Doctors are now scheduling virtual appointments and using online portals to treat patients and share medical information. With all these changes and overwhelming amount of information, it can be discouraging for people to know where to start to find reliable health information about COVID and sift through all the misinformation that is out there. Luckily, we are joined by Dr. Bethany Howlett from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, where she specializes in family medicine and obstetrics. Dr. Howlett also holds a master's in health science from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health with a certificate in health communication.
Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm really excited to spend some time talking about information related to COVID-19, how to access the most reliable and up-to-date information, as well as how can we ensure that we are advocating for ourselves, our community members, for access to healthcare services and access to healthcare information.
Well, we're excited to have you. Can we start by having you tell us how the pandemic has affected your work and the pros or cons of patients relying heavily on the internet for health information during this time?
Throughout 2020, I've seen a shift in two particular areas. One is access, and the other one is advocacy. So to touch on the first one, you know, we in healthcare have had the ability to perform telemedicine visits as well as video visits. But I would say in this past year, I've really seen an intentional rolling out of those visits more so than done in the past. Certainly a lot of that stemmed from demand, the need to continue to provide safe and quality patient care, but doing so in a way that mitigates or reduces the risk of infection exposure. And so I feel like that innovation has allowed us to provide more access for healthcare services for a wider spectrum of patients in our community. So these telemedicine visits as well as video visits are allowing those who work more challenging schedules or work life schedules, or perhaps those who live in more rural communities with difficulty commuting or transportation to the clinic setting. And so from that standpoint, I feel like we've really had the benefit of being able to improve healthcare touch points, not only to primary care, but also to specialty care services. The other component has been the role of patients as well, patients and community members as an advocate in healthcare. So patients more so than ever have become advocates for themselves, advocates for their family and community members by becoming and putting on the role of a researcher. At various times throughout 2020, we continue to learn and grow together in the scientific community to identify COVID-19 as a novel pandemic, as a novel infection, to identify how it was spreading, who was most at risk, and further on down the line about what can we do to best treat it. So the community has been privy to what is the underworld or underbelly of the scientific community typically look like as we try to identify and understand these complex health issues. And so being a part of that, our community members have been looking up and reading and informing themselves and those around them as that new information has been coming out. And so from that standpoint, I've seen my patients and our community members relying very heavily on information coming from the radio, from television, from online or internet touch points as well. The risk that plays, the risk that having additional information more readily available to you then becomes, how do we validate that information, or how do I know which information is reliable? What do I trust and what should I not trust?
Absolutely. So based on finding reliable health information, can you share your recommendations for patients who are looking online for information related to COVID-19? And what websites would be good starting points?
So some of the public health resources that I find most up-to-date and most reliable include the Centers for Disease Control at a national level, a great resource online or great website to share the most up-to-date information regarding the coronavirus infection, as well as vaccine points or information. I also strongly encourage folks to take a look at their local public health agencies, and that might be the Public Health Madison and Dane County or in other surrounding counties. That can tell you more specific information about the area in which you live and work. And then I encourage you certainly to use your healthcare system, your primary healthcare system, your primary care physician as a resource. There are also individuals who do not have a primary care physician, but we can still certainly benefit from the healthcare systems that exist in and around Madison. And so I encourage you to look at resources like UW Health or University of Wisconsin Health that has general information about COVID in our community.
Those are great resources. Unfortunately, there has been a lot of talk about misinformation found online, especially as it relates to COVID, test results, and vaccines. In our Health Online program, we don't talk a lot about finding information on social media. Could you tell us your thoughts about social media? Any tips for sifting through the misinformation?
So I find that social media can be a really great connector. My personal experience, I spent some time working internationally between 2005 and 2008, when a number of social media programs or applications were becoming well known. And so as a way to connect with family, friends, and colleagues throughout the world and to share diverse thoughts, I feel like they can be a great connector. They can also be a really great tool for advocacy, elevating the voices of historically marginalized community members or populations. The risk, of course, comes down to content monitoring. Who is responsible and who's accountable for ensuring that information is accurate in that setting? And so the approach that I take myself and I encourage others to take when exploring a piece of information that I come across, whether I come across that information through a social media outlet, whether I hear about it from a friend or a family member or read it in an article somewhere, I encourage you to take an approach of humble inquiry, of intellectual curiosity. So what that means, so let's say that we're reading something or we're hearing something new or different. I'd encourage you to pause, consider the format or the way in which it's presented. I want you to think about, who are the content experts in the area that's being discussed? Are their voices present in this particular piece or in this particular forum or format? Who are the people that are most at risk if this information were correct or if this information were incorrect? And then thinking, where might I go to further explore this information? So how can I learn more? So, you know, the kind of summary of that approach is curiosity, saying, okay, here's some information, questioning kind of where it's coming from, who's sharing the information, who's speaking and who's not speaking, whose voice is there and whose voice is not there. And then how can I follow up on this to see if this is accurate information? I think one point that has been frustrating and at times challenging for many over the course of the past year as we've been learning to live with a coronavirus or COVID-19 and live within this pandemic. One area that I think has been particularly challenging in 2020 is the feeling that we have some information, we share this information, and then all of a sudden the information changes. And the question becomes, well, were we wrong before? Were we sharing the wrong information? Or did we build upon information to learn something new? And so this concept of scientific inquiry, I think, is new to a lot of people. Within the world of medicine, this is a routine kind of concept that I have been taught, I have been trained to do, where I have a hypothesis and I test that hypothesis and then I get an outcome. And then based on that piece of information, I then continue to test maybe a new hypothesis. So with coronavirus, this coronavirus 19 or COVID-19 being a completely novel version of coronavirus present in the world, there was a lot of learning going on early on. And as we learned more information, we had to adapt and had to change what our recommendations were so that we were providing the most accurate, up-to-date information to communities. So what that sometimes looked like was we're changing our minds. We had one idea about, say, mask use or mask wearing, and perhaps that shifted over time, and now we have a new recommendation. That can be pretty frustrating, right? I can imagine in a personal relationship with a friend, if they're constantly changing their mind about something or changing kind of how they approach something, that can come across as really frustrating and maybe, I can't think of what the word is. So that can come across as a pretty frustrating personality trait. But the reality is that within the healthcare system or within the scientific, within a scientific approach, that's exactly what we have to do. And so it's natural that recommendations are going to subtly shift over time. As we gather more information, you will see changes and updates. And so having a couple of trusted resources in your back pocket is going to be really essential. And so as I mentioned before, a couple of those really trusted resources, folks whose only goal is to provide the most accurate, up-to-date information to you, include people like your primary care physician, your local public health agency, or even the broader public health agencies within our country, including the Centers for Disease Control. Another point that I think is really important is to put this in historical context. So in the development or creation of the medical field, there have been a number of gross injustices that have happened. And I think it's important that we identify and recognize that institutional racism has taken place within healthcare in order to achieve medical discoveries. Medical institutions have colonized the bodies of Black and Indigenous persons in the name of science. And this has most definitely sown deep-seated, deep-rooted mistrust of the healthcare system. And so I think it is important that while I sing the praises of your healthcare system and your public health institutions as being the go-to source of information, I also recognize that throughout history, we have not always been a trusted source. And because of that, I also want to emphasize the importance and the role of community members and community partnerships, community organizations in also providing information about COVID-19 and this current pandemic. So Wisconsin Health Literacy being one of those as a great and trusted resource. There are many other phenomenal community organizations in and around Madison. And so if there is a location in an organization that you have found trust and connection with, that would be a space that I encourage you to connect with also. They can also serve as a guide and a support to lead you in the right direction for accurate and appropriate public health information.
Thank you for mentioning those broader resources to get health information. Unfortunately, accessibility has been a big concern in healthcare. In addition to transportation issues and fewer hospitals in rural areas, we are now faced with telehealth and patients getting internet access to visit with providers virtually. Have you had to experience telemedicine in your practice? And can you elaborate on this concern? Are there resources available for patients that don't have internet access or reliable internet to still participate in telehealth?
Access to healthcare is such a big topic. And there's so many it's so multifaceted. So certainly transportation is one very, very tangible access barrier, right? But there are also so many others. So you mentioned kind of here about access, the ability to participate in telehealth or telemedicine visits, and that might be reliant on a phone connection. It might be reliant upon a stable internet connection. And so I feel like this is a little bit of a double-edged sword, because for many community members, having the ability to do in-person or video or telemed in and of itself has greatly improved access to a physician. Folks who are trying to work from home, folks who are trying to balance caring for children or other family members while also trying to do their own work from home. I think having the option of doing telemed and video visits has improved their access to a healthcare provider. But on the other side, it does require that reliable access to an internet source. I do really appreciate the ability to have patients use telemed or video visits as a way to connect to specialty care, to minimize the barriers of transportation, to minimize perhaps those, the cost associated with travel for gas or paying for parking or the difficulty of navigating a new physical space or a new building. So from that standpoint, we've lowered the bar in terms of getting through the quote unquote virtual door of physicians or healthcare providers in specialty care. The flip side of that is those video visits require reliable internet access, which is not always something that our community members experience. At this particular point in time, our healthcare systems are not directly involved in ensuring consistent and reliable internet access. And so the place that I would encourage folks to connect to if they are struggling or having any issues with lack of reliable access would be your local Department of Human Services. So Dane County has a Department of Human Services, as do the surrounding counties from Dane County. And what that resource can provide, connect you with individuals, with other organizations and spaces that can support you in finding a way to reliably connect to healthcare providers and with other resources that are only accessible through the internet.
That is very helpful. With technology literally at our fingertips and the medical practices around patient-centered care, it's only natural that patients look online for health information, tips, and services. Some websites even have symptom checkers to help patients potentially identify what's going on with them. Is there a point in someone's search they should say, I better double check with my provider to see what they think? Or is it safe for someone to self-diagnose based on what they find online?
Yes. So these online tools, I think, can be both informative and helpful, but they also risk being a little bit, dare I say, dangerous. So I'm going to give you a funny example, not to minimize the question in any way, but to kind of put it in a different perspective. So when I think about these symptom checkers, I think about those little apps or those online questionnaires that sometimes kind of get filtered through. And specifically, the one that comes to mind is like the Harry Potter sorting hat. If you are a Harry Potter fan, I think without even pausing, you could probably say, what house are you in, right? You know, the Harry Potter four houses that exist at the School of Wizardry. And while you may relate to one of those houses, I think I end up being a Hufflepuff. I admit it. I'm a proud Hufflepuff. I would also say that that's not all that you are, right? We all have, it tells you kind of one part of who you are, but it's only a piece of the puzzle. That's, I think, the best metaphor perhaps that I can come across when it comes to these online screening tools specifically related to health and healthcare. So it's asking you a series of questions, but what that tool doesn't see or look for is you as a multidimensional, complex human being. It doesn't look at your personal health history, your family health history, the medications that you're taking, your health priorities, what's important to you. And so really it's that complex nature of kind of asking those other questions that your healthcare team can put into perspective at fully understanding what your symptoms are. So my suggestion, if you are experiencing new or different symptoms for your body, if it's something that you are worried enough that you would feel like taking an online symptom checker is an important thing for you, I'd encourage you to touch base with your primary healthcare team and get guidance. For those of you who do not have insurance currently or do not have a primary medical home, I'd encourage you to reach out to some of the health and human services locations. That could be through Public Health Madison Dane County. That could be through the Department of Human Services that would be able to guide you in getting an access point so that you're not feeling that your only resource is to go to an emergency department or to be able have to pay additional costs to get your question or concern answered. That being said, I will say that over the course of 2020, there were some studies that came out that showed that we were seeing fewer episodes of heart attacks or say appendicitis in the first couple of months of 2020 or first couple of months when coronavirus, the pandemic was kind of rolling out. It is unlikely that COVID was affecting those things. And the bigger reality is that people were probably not going to get care for those health conditions. And so I do have a word of warning that if you are having new or different symptoms, it really is important that we're not delaying care. I know that the health institutions that are emergency department, urgent care settings that are taking care of people now in the midst of COVID-19 are doing it in the safest, most thoughtful way possible, not only to keep our healthcare providers safe, but also to keep you safe. And so if you are having new or different symptoms, again, I'd encourage you to reach out to your primary care provider or your primary medical home. And if you do not have one, I'd encourage you to connect with a resource that can find one for you and know that you can always seek out additional care at urgent care or the emergency department in order to make sure that we're keeping you and your family safe and healthy.
I love the Harry Potter metaphor, and thanks for sharing important reminders that we still need to seek care. Are there any other thoughts that you'd like to share with us today?
So thank you again so much for inviting me on to speak today. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. You know, I think the overarching key points that I'd like to make is that we're learning together as the pandemic has been taking place. And with learning, sometimes the information that we had before we learned was not correct. And so we have to unlearn old information and then move forward together. So I encourage folks to be patient with that scientific inquiry approach. I encourage folks to find that trusted resource for themselves. I've mentioned a couple of them. And again, those resources could include the U.S. Centers for Disease Control or the cdc.gov website. That could include your local public health agency. So here in Madison-Dane County, that would be the public health MDC, madisondanecounty.com website, where you can learn trusted information about the data that's up to date here in Dane County, as well as information for testing, as well as vaccine accessibility. I also encourage you to connect with your own primary medical home, which many people call their primary care physician or their primary care person. That's a great resource, as well as your own trusted community organization. So organizations like Wisconsin Health Literacy, local community centers like Lucier or Goodman Community Center, all of those are fantastic resources. The Beacon is another great one. And so feel free to connect with those organizations. And I assure you they can find a way to get the information that you need. And the last point that I would make is to take care of yourself and to take care of those around you. So continue to stay safe, continue to wash your hands and wear your mask so that you're physically keeping yourself and others safe. But I also encourage you to make sure that you're coping well with all of the changes that have been taking place this last year. So building resiliency and coping tools are really essential. I'm a huge fan of the UW's Center for Healthy Minds. There are a lot of great resources there, including a lot of free resources on free tools on supporting for identifying symptoms of depression and anxiety, as well as some other resources for connecting you to healthcare providers if needed. So again, thank you so much for having me, and I hope that you found some of this information helpful today.
Thank you so much, and thank you to all our guests for joining us today and sharing their expertise on the different topics. And thank you for listening in on today's discussion. If you have any questions or would like to contact with us on the possible programming in your community, please contact us at healthliteracy@wisconsinliteracy.org. Also, join us, Ward 89.9 FM, and other Community Shares of Wisconsin nonprofits for the Big Share on March 2nd. A day of online giving that helps Wisconsin Health Literacy offer health literacy programming. Thank you.